Hare Hare. Pitanavala Bhagavad Bhadadhari Pitanavala Bhagavad Bhadadhari Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Randana Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Randana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamunatira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Om Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa Parivachakacharya Satutta Sarashi Shimad Bhakti Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jaya Jaya Om Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa Parivachakacharya Satutta Sarashi Shimad Bhakti Saranta Saraswati Goswami Prabhupada Ki Jaya Ananta Koti Vaishnavind Ki Jaya Amacharya Salaharidas Thakur Ki Jaya Premsikohansi Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita Gadadhar, Shri Vasari Gaur Bhaktivindi Ki Jai, Sisi Radha Krishna Gopinath, Shama Kunda Radha Kunda, Giri Govardhan Ki Jai, Sri Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai, Mayapur Navadvip Dham Ki Jai, Jagannath Puri Dham Ki Jai, Nuraman Reti Ki Jai, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Go Premanandi. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sisi Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskrityam.
Narayanam
Namaskrityam. Naram Chaiva Narottamam. Devim Sarasvatam Vyasam Tato Jayam Udirayat. Today we're reading Srimad Bhagavatam's second canto, chapter 4, Process of Creation, text 24. Namastasmai Bhagavate. Vasudevaya Vedase. Papur Gyanam Ayam Somya Yan Mukam Bruhu Hasavam Namastasmai Bhagavate Vasudevaya Vedase Papur Gyanam Ayam Somya Yan Mukam Bruhu Hasavam Vasudevaya Vedase. Vasudevaya Vedase.
Pahapur Gyanamayam Samya.
Yam Mukham Ruhasavam.
Namastasmai Bhagavate.
Vasudevaya Vedase.
Pahapur Gyanamayam Samya.
Yan
Mukham Ruhasavam. Ladies?
Namastasmai Bhagavate.
Vasudevaya Vedase.
Pahapur Gyanamayam Samya.
Yan Mukham Ruhasavam.
Namastasmai Bhagavate.
Vasudevaya Vedase.
Papurjanamayam Samya.
Yan Mukham Ruhasavam.
Nama.
My obeisances.
Tasmai.
Unto him.
Bhagavate.
Unto the personality of Godhead.
Vasudevaya,
unto Vasudev or his incarnations.
Vedase,
the compiler of Vedic literatures.
Pabahu,
drunk.
Gyanam,
knowledge.
Ahim,
this Vedic knowledge.
Somya,
the devotees, especially the consorts of Lord Krishna.
Yat,
from whose?
Mukha Amruhu,
the lotus-like mouth.
Asavam,
nectar from his mouth.
Translation.
Sukadeva Goswami continued.
I offer my respectful obeisances unto Srila Vyasadeva,
the incarnation of Vasudeva, who compiled the Vedic literatures.
The pure devotees drink up the nectarian transcendental knowledge dropping from the lotus-like mouth of the Lord.
Please repeat.
I offer my respectful obeisances
unto Srila Vyasadeva,
the incarnation of Vasudev,
who compiled the Vedic literature scriptures.
The pure devotees drink up
the nectarian transcendental knowledge
dropping from the lotus-like mouth of the Lord.
Before we begin the purport, just want to put the verse into context because there's a transition at this point. This chapter is called The Process of Creation, but there's really very little description of the creation other than Sukadeva Goswami's prayers. What happened was that back in text 6 and 7, after hearing about the universal form of the Lord and the Lord in the heart, Maharaj Parikit, then there was some description about the change of the heart between Sonika Rishi and Suta Goswami. And then Maharaj Parikit continued to inquire, I beg to know from you how the personality of Godhead, by his personal energies, creates these phenomenal universes as they are, which are inconceivable, even to great demigods. Kindly describe how the Supreme Lord, who is all-powerful, engages his different energies and different expansions in maintaining and again winding up the phenomenal world in the sporting spirit of a player. So that question will take quite some time to answer in depth. But before he speaks, Sukadeva Goswami prayed to be given the intelligence and the ability to speak in such a way that he could properly transmit the information. So for 12 verses, from 12 to 23, Sukadeva Goswami prayed to the Lord, please decorate my statements. Please be pleased with me while I speak. And that's what we've been reading for the last couple of weeks. In this verse, he transitions. Instead of offering his obeisances to the Lord and asking for blessings, he changes to his father, to the compiler of the Vedas. Now I offer my respectful obeisances unto Vasudeva, unto Srila Vyasadeva, the incarnation of Vasudeva, the compiler of the scriptures. And then tomorrow's verse will be the last verse in the chapter. And that's the whole process of creation chapter, which is basically just an introduction to the topics of the process of creation, which will continue pretty much through a lot of the third canto. So this purport has also been broken up into two parts. Two basic themes are in the verse. The first sentence is, I offer my respectful obeisances unto Srila Vyasadeva, the incarnation of Vasudeva, who compiled the Vedic scriptures. That's the first part of the verse. The second part of the verse, the pure devotees drink up the nectarian transcendental knowledge, dropping from the lotus-like mouth of the Lord. So I'll start with the first part of the verse and then go to the second part of the purport. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. In pursuance of the specific utterance, Vedhase, or the compiler of the system of transcendental knowledge, Srila Sridhar Swami has commented that the respectful obeisances are offered to Srila Vyasadeva, who is the incarnation of Vasudeva. Srila Jiva Goswami has agreed to this. So that verse that we said, Vasudevaya Vedhase, is being interpreted and clarified that this means offering obeisances to Vyasadeva. The Vedas are vast. They're unlimited and they're eternal. Vedic knowledge comes from the spiritual world. It's originally spoken by the Supreme Lord. And in various universes, it manifests in various ways, and on different planets, it manifests in different ways through different people and different circumstances. But there's a theme which is consistent through all of it. There are the four Vedas, the 108 Upanishads, 18 Puranas, and in those Puranas, six of them are meant for those in the mode of ignorance, six of them are for those in the mode of passion, and six of them are for those in the mode of goodness. So there's information for all classes of people on all planets and all human bodies who have intelligence. And the various steps, prescriptions, stories, rituals, prescribed worship in those Vedas are meant for those different classes of people to elevate them. The idea is that Krishna prema is inherent in every living entity. Nityasira Krishna prema sadhya kabu noi shravanada sura chite korea udoi. It doesn't come from someplace else. It's like a plant that's within a seed. The plant is in there, it just has to come out. So the Vedic system of knowledge, compiled by Vyasadeva or presented by the Lord, is meant to awaken that prayojana, that love of God that's dormant in everybody. And it requires a different type of information, practice, prescribed rules and rituals, environment, body, in order to awaken it. But the whole process is meant for awakening that love. So Vyasadeva compiled all these Vedas, and the information within them has that purpose. And Sukadeva Goswami, before speaking specifically about the process of creation, is offering his obeisances to him. That's the first part of the purport. Second part of the purport goes, but Srila Viswanath Chakrabarti Thakur has made further advance, namely that the nectar from the mouth of Lord Krishna is transferred to his different consorts, and thus they learn the finer arts of music, dance, dressing, decorations, and all such things which are relished by the Lord. Such music, dance, and decorations enjoyed by the Lord are certainly not anything mundane, because the Lord is addressed in the very beginning as para, or transcendental. This transcendental knowledge is unknown to the forgotten souls. Srila Vyasadeva, who is the incarnation of the Lord, thus compiled the Vedic literatures to revive the lost memory of the conditioned souls about their eternal relation with the Lord. One should therefore try to understand the Vedic scriptures, or the nectar transferred by the Lord to his consorts in the conjugal humor from the lotus-like mouth of Vyasadeva or Sukadeva. By gradual development of transcendental knowledge, one can rise to the stage of the transcendental arts and of music and dance displayed by the Lord in his Rasa Lila. But without having Vedic knowledge, one can hardly understand the transcendental nature of the Lord's Rasa dance and music. The pure devotees of the Lord, however, can equally relish the nectar in the form of the profound philosophical discourses and in the form of kissing by the Lord in the rasa dance, as there is no mundane distinction between the two. That's pretty esoteric. there's an important part here that requires a little more expansion. By the gradual development of transcendental knowledge, one can rise to the stage of the transcendental arts of music and dance displayed by the Lord in his rasa lila. But without having Vedic knowledge, one can hardly understand the transcendental nature of the Lord's rasa dance and music. So we conditioned souls have a complete life of life in this material world and the laws and elements which surround us and condition us. So when we conceive of the rasa dance, we have no tools on the spiritual platform to understand what that is and what all of us do in the beginning stages is take those understandings from this world and subscribe them to the spiritual practice. We take what we know and we apply it to what we don't know and we mix the two. And that's our understanding of what the rasa dance is. And that manifests in different ways with different people according to their modes of material nature and their understanding. It really doesn't lift one and propel one to experience the rasa dance and what's going on there. That's what's being described here. It's a gradual process, again, back to the Vedas, and that process which awakens it from sambandha to abhideha to prayojana, where that love manifests. And then once one is in this transcendental stage, then there's a direct connection. And there are symptoms in the character of people who have actually elevated to that platform. That's described even in Bhagavad Gita. Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma Na Sochati Na Kankshati Sama Sarveshu Bhuteshu Mad Bhaktim Labhate Param. For example, there are hundreds and thousands of examples. The quality, the character of the persons must also reflect transcendence rather than mundane world. So, but hearing and contacting Nitya Siddhas, elevated transcendental personalities and their messages awakens that reality within the living entity because it's there. Shravanadi Sudachite, Karaya Odoi means it awakens by hearing. Shravanadi Sudachite, hearing from someone who's pure. Hearing that pure vibration. So, in the verse, it says here, or in the purport, it says that Lord Krishna transfers to his different consorts these fine arts. So how does that happen and where is that described? Brahma Samhita explains, text 37, Ananda Chinmaya Rasa Pratipavita Bis Tabirja Eja Nidjarupataya Kalabi Goloka eva nevasyaka kilatma bhuto govindam adipurusham tamaham bhajami. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, residing in his own realm, Goloka, with Radha, resembling his own spiritual figure, the embodiment of the ecstatic potency, possessed of the 64 artistic activities in the company of her confidants or sakis, embodiments of the extensions of her bodily form, permeated and vitalized by his ever blissful spiritual rasa. So this verse explains it, and the purport explains further that in Goloka Vrindavan, there are 64 different types of arts. And everything comes from Krishna, Janmadya Satyataha. He is the origin of all energy. But he expands himself in various ways, as we know. He expands as Balaram. Balaram expands as Vasudev, Sankarshan, Padumna, and Aniruddha. That Sankarshan expands again into another quadruple expansion. And then they fill up all of Vaikuntha, and then there are incarnations which come into the material world through Mahavishnu, Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, and Shirodakshaya Vishnu. Now, each one of those expansions has a corresponding female consort. Krishna also expands as his Hladini Shakti, personified, pleasure potency, Ananda. This is described in the fourth chapter of Adi Lila of Chaitanya Charitamrita. That personality is Srimati Radharani. And just as Krishna expands himself into unlimited forms, she expands herself into unlimited forms. Basically, three categories: the gopis of Vrindavan, the queens of Dwarka, and the consorts or goddesses of fortune in the spiritual Vaikunthas. Nija Rupataya. What was the verse? Tabiri agent Nija Rupataya Kalabi. Nija Rupataya Kalabi. Nija Rupataya means expansions of his form. Nija Rupa. Kala means apart. So, we're reading about how Krishna transferred from his lips to the gopis, to the consorts, to the queens, knowledge, and how that expands itself into the forms of the various arts. Some of the arts, don't want to list the whole thing, but the 64 arts are singing, playing of musical instruments, dancing, theatricals, painting the face and body with colored unguents, etc., cooking, making the bed, decorating the bed, decorating with flowers, so many different arts. These are what all these arts, manifesting in their own eternal forms, are ever visible in the region of Goloka as the ingredients of rasa. That's how Krishna and his consorts relate with one another and create pleasure. And they've been unstintedly exhibited in the pastimes of Braj by the spiritual chit potency. So when Krishna comes to this world, Golokera Premadana, Harinama Sankirtan, he brings with him and performs the pastimes, which are also going on in Goloka Vrindavan. So how can we, in this day and age, and in our fallen condition, experience and awaken that which was given to us by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna, in the mood of Srimati Radharani, come to this world to perform pastimes, which not only did he experience that position, but by his pastimes of experiencing that position, he showed and spread how others can also experience it. So there's a nice pastime in the Antya-lila of Chaitanya Charitamrita, and I'll read from that, which explains how the nectar from the lips of Krishna is transported to his consorts, and how we can also experience the same. Text 88 of chapter 16, Antya-lila. The offering of food known as Gopal Vallabha Bhog was then given to Lord Jagannath, and Artik was performed with the sound of the conch and ringing of bells. This Gopal Vallabha Bhog is a morning snack. It's about 8 o'clock in the morning. Most of it is different types of coconut, but there are some bananas and some rubri, a milk sweet. But what they do is the cooks in Jagannath Puri for generations, there are different castes in Jagannath Puri called Swaras and Mahaswaras. Those are the cooks. And they're the ones that prepare these different items for Lord Jagannath's offerings. And they take coconut and they grate it in various ways. Sometimes it's chips, sometimes it's shredded, and they sometimes soak it in sugar, sometimes they fry it. You know, they make different things, and then they have those little baskets that they put it in. So this Gopal Vallabha Bhog was at the time when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was there. When the artik finished, the prasadam was taken out, and the servants of Lord Jagannath came to offer Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu some of it. The servants of Lord Jagannath first garlanded Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and then offered him Lord Jagannath's prasadam. The prasadam was so nice that its aroma alone, to say nothing of its taste, would drive the mind mad. The prasadam was made of very valuable ingredients, and therefore the servant wanted to feed Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu a portion of it. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu tasted a portion of that prasadam, and Govinda took the rest and bound it in the end of his wrapper. Now, by Govinda taking that prasadam and binding it in his chadar means that it was dried prasadam. You can't do that with rubbery or, you know, wet, milky sweets. It could have had some wrapper on it. It could have been in a basket. But still, we'll find out later that it was the dry food. To Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that prasadam tasted millions upon millions of times better than nectar. And thus he was fully satisfied. The hair all over his body stood on end. And incessant tears flowed from his eyes. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu considered, where has such a taste in this prasadam come from? Certainly it is due to having been touched by the nectar of Krishna's lips. Understanding this, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu felt an emotion of ecstatic love for Krishna. But upon seeing the servants of Lord Jagannath, he restrained himself. The Lord said again and again, only by great fortune may one come by a particle of the remnants of food offered to the Lord. These are remnants of food that Krishna has eaten and thus turned to nectar with his lips. It surpasses heavenly nectar, and even such demigods as Lord Brahma find it difficult to obtain. Remnants by Krishna are called thela. One who obtains even a small portion must be considered very fortunate. Only one who is only ordinarily fortunate cannot obtain such mercy. Only persons who have the full mercy of Krishna can receive such remnants. The word sukriti refers to pious activities performed by the mercy of Krishna. One who is fortunate enough to obtain such mercy receives the remnants of the Lord's food and thus becomes glorious. This is an important point, and it's one that can fuel our enthusiasm all the time in devotional service, no matter how difficult life gets sometimes. Sukriti has different, there are different types of sukriti. Punya, pious activities, and sukriti can be very similar. Giving in charity, opening hospitals, doing things for others, but they're offering shraddha, studying the Sankhya part of the Vedas. These are different things that are explained. Those are called subha karma. They're good karma. But it's because they're material, they have a beginning and an end. Even in Bhagavad Gita, it describes how someone can be elevated to the heavenly planets by accumulating enough pious credit that when you get the next body, you're actually sent to a heavenly environment. But When those pious activities are exhausted, the living entity again falls back down into another body and has to go through the cycle again. Then there's another kind of sukriti called bhakti prada sukriti, which has no end. Neha bhikramanasho stri patyavayo nevidite swapam apyasa dharmasya tayate mahatobayat. In this endeavor, there is no loss or diminution. It never ends. It's that kind of activity which, if you do 1% in one lifetime, you have that 1% in you in the next lifetime. Now, what is that? Is that some kind of like calculation by the Lord and his administration that has to keep track of everybody's punya and their activities? And some of it's eternal and some of it's not? No. If it's actually awakening the love that's dormant in the living entity to some extent, then that stays with that living entity because it's already been awakened. It's just like a plant. Once it starts to germinate and open, it's never going to go back into the seed again. It's out. It's open. Now it's just a matter of time and continued access to those things which make it grow that will enhance its growth. So in the same way, sukriti has these details. So whatever we do in devotional service, following Ekadasi, having this nice program for Janmashtami, worshiping all the deities with all these flowers, making garlands, whatever you're doing, every single moment that you're doing those things, you're accumulating that kind of bhakti prada sukriti. So in that way, it can be very encouraging, no matter what's going on, chanting your rounds, whatever these activities are that have eternal benefit are on that level. So Mahaprabhu is stating that if one has accumulated those, then they come in contact with Mahaprasad. After saying this, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu bade farewell to all the servants. After seeing the next offering of food to Lord Jagannath, a function known as Upalboga, he returned to his own quarters. It's also interesting. It gives an idea of what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did every day. At 8 o'clock in the morning, there's the offering of Govindabhog, which we just read about. Then there's another offering of Rajbhog around 10 o'clock, and around 11 or 12 now, sometimes it's 1 or 2. The Upalboga, that's the one where they offer all the different pots of rice and prasadam and dal and sabjis and tons of it in back of the Garuda Stamba. There's a Bhog Mandap, and they offer it there. So he stayed there all that time, and then he went to his quarters. After finishing his noon duties, he would go to the beach, say his Gayatri, take bath. He ate his lunch. Now, note that he's eating his lunch. He's eating prasadam, but constantly remembered the other remnants of Lord Krishna's food. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu performed his external activities, but his mind was filled with ecstatic love. With great difficulty, he tried to restrain his mind, but it would always be overwhelmed by very deep ecstasy. After finishing his evening duties, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sat down with his personal associates in a secluded place and discussed the pastimes of Krishna in great jubilation. So at night, the devotees would come to Gambira or Radhakanta Math, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's place, and get together and churn these nectars. Following the indication of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Govinda brought that prasadam from the morning offering of Lord Jagannath. The Lord sent some to Paramananda Puri and Brahmananda Bharati. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then gave shares of that prasadam to Ramananda Rai, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, Swarup Damodar Goswami, and to the other devotees. As they tasted these uncommon sweetness and fragrance of that prasadam, everyone's mind was struck with wonder. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "These ingredients, such as sugar, camphor, black pepper, cardamom, cloves, butter, spices, and licorice, or fennel, are all material. Everyone has tasted these material substances before. However, in these ingredients, there are extraordinary tastes and uncommon fragrances. Just taste them and see the difference in the experience." Apart from the taste, Even the fragrance pleases the mind and makes one forget all other sweetness besides its own. Therefore, it is to be understood that the spiritual nectar of Krishna's lips has touched these ordinary ingredients and transferred to them their spiritual qualities. The fragrance and tastes that are uncommon and greatly enchanting and that make one forget all other experiences are the attributes of Krishna's lips. This prasadam has been made available as a result of many pious activities. Now taste it with great faith and devotion. Lord, loudly chanting the holy name of Hari, all of them tasted that prasadam. As they tasted it, their minds became mad with the ecstasy of love. In ecstatic love, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ordered Ramananda Rai to recite some verses. Thus, Ramananda Rai spoke as follows. Now, let's go back to our purport here just for a second. And the last sentence. Because you always wonder, how can this be? The pure devotees of the Lord, however, can equally relish the nectar. The pure devotees of the Lord, however, can equally relish the nectar in the form of profound philosophical discourses and in the form of kissing by the Lord in the rasa dance, as there is no mundane distinction between the two. So, Ramananda Rai, please speak a verse. Ramananda Rai. O hero of charity, please deliver unto us the nectar of your lips. That nectar increases lusty desires for enjoyment and diminishes lamentation in the material world. Kindly give us the nectar of your lips, which were touched by your transcendentally vibrating flute, for the nectar makes all human beings forget all other attachments. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. This is a quotation from the Srimad Bhagavatam 10:31-14. And text chapter 31 is the chapter where the gopis, you remember, they all met with Krishna. They started to dance, and then all of a sudden he disappeared with one of the gopis. Then they went running through the forests looking for him. They found the footprints. They found that he had taken her, and then all of a sudden her footprints were gone, so they knew that he picked her up, but then everything was gone. And then they found Srimati Radharani in the forest all alone because Krishna had left her. Then all the gopis went back to the banks of the Jamuna River because they entered deep into the forest, so far into the forest it got so dark they couldn't see anymore. So they went back, it was full moon, went back to the river Jamuna, sat down on the banks, set out their shawls and different things, and started to have bhajans and sing in prayers to Krishna. And this is one of those prayers, praying for the nectar of his lips. Upon hearing Ramananda Rai quote this verse, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very satisfied. Then he recited the following verse, which had been spoken by Srimati Radharani in great anxiety. My dear friend, the all-surpassing nectar from the lips of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna can be obtained only by many, many pious activities. For the beautiful gopis of Vrindavan, that nectar vanquishes the desire for all other tastes. Madan Mohan always chews pan that surpasses the nectar of heaven. He is certainly increasing the desires of my tongue. Interestingly enough, this book is, this Govinda Lilamrita, this is a verse from Govinda Lilamrita, also written by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. So he's using one of his own verses. But I wanted to kind of put that verse into its own context because it's beautiful. I looked it up where it comes from. Govinda Lilamrita is a book which describes the 8 different time periods in Krishna's Astakaliya Lila. Asta means 8, like Astami. Astakaliya Lila. It's his eightfold kala time periods. And this one describes the midday period. So at the beginning of each of the 8 sections, Krishnadas Kaviraj composed a kind of like outline verse, which explains what's going to happen during that during those pastimes of that time period, and then he expands on it the rest of the chapter. So this is the verse for the midday pastimes. I remember Radha and Krishna at midday, full of desire, being served by their attendants, enchanted by various ornament-like physical transformations of ecstasy arising out of meeting each other, being anxious out of shyness and eagerness. Being pleased with the joking words of Lalita and other girlfriends, they perform sacrifices for Cupid, swing, walk in the forest, play in the waters of Radhakund, quarrel over Krishna's stolen flute, enjoy conjugal pastimes, drink madhu, worship the sun god, and play other such sports. So, in order to set that up where Radharani is going to leave home, it goes back after that verse, tells what's going to happen. Now Radharani's in Java, she's getting ready to go out, and she's thinking of Krishna. So although the lips is the main thing that we're talking about in this class, because this expands it a little more, that's why I've included it. Meanwhile at home, Sri Radhika, who is so dear to the Prince of Braj, became attracted to her beloved with all her five senses simultaneously. Being very eager to meet him, she told Vishakha, who tried to pacify her, Osaki, the prince of cowherds, inundates the mountain-like minds of the girls of Braj with an ocean of his nectarine beauty. He gives joy to the ears with his pleasant, joking words, and he pleases the body, or the sense of touch, with his body. It is cooler than millions of moons. He inundates the world with his ambrosial fragrance, and with the nectar of his pleasing lips. In this way, he forcibly attracts my five senses. Osaki, with his beautiful dress that shines like fresh lightning, his bodily luster is like that of a fresh rain cloud. His wonderful Murali flute, his face that's like the full moon autumn, adorned with peacock feather and his beautiful star-like necklace. Sri Krishna, the enchanter of Cupid, increases the desires of my eyes. Osaki, with his voice that is deep like the rumbling of clouds, with his attractive sound and ornaments, with his joking words that are full of tasty double meanings, and with his flute playing that attracts the best of women like the goddesses of fortune, Sri Krishna, the enchanter of Cupid, increases the desires of my ears. Osaki, with the wave of his bodily fragrance that defeats the pride of musk and that attracts all women, with the fragrance of the lotus mixed with camphor on the eight lotuses of his body, and with his bodily fragrance of musk, camphor, aguru, and sandal paste, Sri Krishna, the enchanter of Cupid, increases the desires of my nostrils. Osaki, with his chest that is beautiful like a sapphire gate, with his arms that relieve the lusty affliction of the minds of young girls like bolts, and with his body that is made cool with camphor, yellow sandal paste, moonbeams, and lotuses, Sri Krishna, the enchanter of Cupid, increases the desires of my heart. Osaki, with the sweet nectar of his lips, which is what we're eating today now, that makes the incomparable housewives of Braj lose their taste for all other flavors, of which not even a drop can be attained without having great pious merit, and with his chewed betel leaves that defeat the pride of nectar, Sri Krishna, the enchanter of Cupid, increases the desires of my tongue. So, after saying this verse about the lips, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was overwhelmed by ecstatic, loving emotions. Talking like a madman, he began to explain the two meanings of these two verses. My dear lover, Lord Krishna said in the mood of Srimati Radharani, let me describe some of the characteristics of your transcendental lips. They agitate the mind and body of everyone. They increase the lusty desires for enjoyment. They destroy the burden of material happiness and lamentation. And they make one forget all material tastes. The whole world falls under their control. They vanquish shame, religion, and patience, especially in women. Indeed, they inspire madness in the minds of all women. Your lips increase the greed of the tongue and thus attract it. Considering all this, we see that the activities of your transcendental lips are always paradoxical. My dear Krishna, since you are a male, it is not very extraordinary that your attraction of your lips can disturb the minds of women. But I'm ashamed to say that your impudent lips sometimes attract even your flute, which is also considered a male. It likes to drink the nectar of your lips, and thus it also forgets all the other tastes. Aside from conscious living beings, even unconscious matter, again, sometimes made conscious by your lips. Therefore, your lips are great magicians. Paradoxically, although your flute is nothing but dry wood, your lips constantly make it drink their nectar. They create a mind and senses in that dry wood flute and give it transcendental bliss. That flute is a very cunning male who drinks again and again the taste of another male's lips. It advertises its qualities and says to the gopis, "Oh, gopis, if you are so proud of being women, come forward and enjoy your property, the nectar of the lips of the Supreme Personality of Godhead." Thereupon the flute said angrily to me, "Give up your shame, fear, and religion, and come drink the lips of Krishna. On that condition, I'll give up my attachment for them. If you do not give up your shame and fear, however, I shall continuously drink this nectar of Krishna's lips. I am slightly fearful, because you also have the right to drink that nectar. But as for the others, I consider them like straw." The nectar of Krishna's lips, combined with the vibration of his flute, attracts all the people of the three worlds. But if we gopis remain patient out of respect for the religious principles, that flute then criticizes us. The nectar of your lips and the vibration of your flute join together to loosen our belts and induce us to give up shame and religion, even before our superiors. And if by catching us by our hair, they forcibly take us away and deliver us unto you to become your maidservants. Hearing of these incidents, people laugh at us. We have become completely subordinate to that flute. This flute is nothing but a dry stick of bamboo. But because our master, it becomes our master and insults us in so many ways that it forces us into a predicament. What can we do but tolerate it? The mother of a thief cannot cry loudly for justice when the thief is punished. Therefore, we simply remain silent. Such is the policy of these lips. Just consider some other injustices. Everything that touches those lips, including food, drink, or betel, becomes just like nectar. Then it is called Krishna Fela, the remnants left by Krishna. Even after much prayer, the demigods themselves cannot obtain even a small portion of the remnants of such food. Just imagine the pride of those remnants. Only a person who has acted piously for many, many births and has thus become a devotee can obtain the remnants of such food. The betel chewed by Krishna is priceless, and the remnants of such chewed betel from his mouth are said to be the essence of nectar. When the gopis accept these remnants, their mouths become his spittoons. Therefore, my dear Krishna, please give up all these tricks you have set up so expertly. Do not try to kill the life of the gopis with the vibration of your flute. Because of your joking and laughing, you are becoming responsible for killing women. It would be better for you to satisfy us by giving us the charity of the nectar of your lips. While Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was talking like this, his mind changed. His anger subsided, but his mental agitation increased. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued, "This nectar from Krishna's lips is supremely difficult to obtain. But if one gets it, his life becomes successful. When a person is competent to drink that nectar, does not do so, that shameless person continues his life uselessly. There are persons who are unfit to drink that nectar, but who nevertheless drink it continuously, whereas there are those who are suitable, but never get it, and thus die of greed. It is therefore to be understood that such an unfit person must have obtained the nectar of Krishna's lips on the strength of some austerity." Again, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said to Ramananda Roy, "Please say something, I want to hear it." Understanding the situation, Ramananda Roy recited the following words from the gopis. "My dear gopis, what auspicious activities the flute must have performed to enjoy the nectar of Krishna's lips independently and leave only a taste for us gopis, for whom that nectar is actually meant. The forefathers of the flute, the bamboo trees, shed tears of pleasure. His mother, the river, on whose bank that bamboo was born, feels jubilation, and therefore her blooming lotus flowers are standing like hairs on her body. Purport. This is a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam 10:21-9. It's part of a discussion that the gopis had amongst themselves. As the autumn season began in Vrindavan, Lord Krishna was tending the cows and blowing on his flute, and the gopis then began to praise Krishna and discuss the fortunate position of his flute. Hearing this recitation of this verse, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu became absorbed in ecstatic love, and with greatly agitated mind, he began to explain its meaning like a madman. Some gopis said to other gopis, "Just see the astonishing pastimes of Krishna, the son of Brajendana. He will certainly marry all the gopis of Vrindavan. Therefore, the gopis know for certain that the nectar of Krishna's lips is their own property and cannot be enjoyed by anyone else. My dear gopis, fully consider how many pious activities this flute performed in his past life. We don't know what kind of pilgrimages sites he visited, what austerities he performed, or what perfect mantra he chanted. This flute is utterly unfit because it's merely a dead bamboo stick. Moreover, it belongs to the male sex. Yet this flute is always drinking the nectar of Krishna's lips, which surpass nectarian sweetness in every description. Only by hoping for that nectar do the gopis continue to live. Although the nectar of Krishna's lips is the abode and property of the gopis, the flute, which is just an insignificant stick, is forcibly drinking that nectar and loudly inviting the gopis to come drink it also. Just imagine the strength of the flute's austerities and good fortune. Even great devotees drink the nectar of Krishna's lips after the flute has done so. When Krishna takes his bath in universally purifying rivers like the Jamuna or the Ganges of the celestial world, the great personalities of those rivers greedily and jubilantly drink the nectar of the juice from his lips. Aside from the rivers, the trees standing on the banks like great ascetics and engaging in welfare activities for all living entities drink the nectar of Krishna's lips by drawing the water from the river with their roots. We cannot understand why they drink like that. The trees on the banks of the Jamuna and the Ganges are always jubilant. They appear to be smiling with the flowers, shedding tears in the form of flowing honey. Just as the forefathers of a Vaishnav son or grandson feel transcendental bliss, these trees feel blissful because the flute is a member of their families. The gopis considered, the flute is completely unfit for his position. We want to know what kind of austerities that flute executed so that we may also perform the same austerities. Although the flute is unfit, he is drinking the nectar of Krishna's lips. Seeing this, we qualified gopis are dying of unhappiness. Therefore, we must consider the austerities of the flute underwent in his past life. While thus speaking like a madman, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu became full of ecstatic emotion. In the company of his two friends, Swarup Damodar and Ramananda Rai, he sometimes danced, sometimes sang, sometimes became unconscious in ecstatic love. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu passed his days and nights in this way. Expecting the mercy of Swarup, Rupa, Sanatan, and Raghunath Das, and taking their lotus feet on my head, I, the most fallen Krishna Das, continue chanting the epic Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, which is sweeter than the nectar of transcendental bliss. Pandurik Prabhu, microphone.
Sorry, this was wonderful nectar from Chaitanya Charitamrita, thank you. This describes something about the ecstasy of Lord and his devotees when they tasted the prasadam offered to Lord Jagannath. So I don't have these symptoms manifest in me when I take the Mahaprasad that is offered to the deities. So my question is there different levels, different qualities of prasadam, or is it the recipient who is experiencing those? Is it my misfortune?
Good question. I think there's some of both. But what caught my attention was that he took that particular prasadam from the Upal Bhog, from the Govinda Bhog offering, the early morning prasadam, and later in the day he ate his meal, but he didn't exhibit that same symptoms. He told Govinda to hold on to it and then brought that out at night. So somehow or another, he was shining light and making special a special feature of that particular prasadam for some reason, not described why. Well, obviously we should be experiencing that, but again, we have to accumulate enough sukriti so that we can do that. As I was describing sukriti and activities that accumulate over lifetimes in bhakti prada sukriti, the second wave of the nectar of devotion describes, it goes from vaidhi sadhana bhakti, following the rules and regulations of bhakti, and they're all listed. And then the next wave is raganuga sadhana bhakti, where one's spontaneous attraction to Krishna awakens. And the chapter begins with a whole description of only those who have accumulated the sukriti from their previous lives are qualified and will be interested in this part of a reciprocation with the Lord. So it's all part of that system of maturity, I think. Bhagavati?
Thank you for an amazing class. It was wonderful.
It's the book.
Two thoughts came to me. One, that last sentence where there's no difference between the philosophical understanding. I was thinking how, and unfortunately I can't sufficiently quote Srimad Bhagavatam, but how the nectar emanating from the mouth of the Lord is carried on the dust particles of the words of the spiritual master. But we see that all over the world and for decades, so many instances of somebody who picks up the book that came from the mouth of Srila Prabhupada and was transformed into type and then completely changes their life.
Nice. Yes.
So many we've all heard.
Completely changes.
Completely changes. Yes. Just on reading the book.
Nice. I just had an experience a few days ago of somebody that did that. Yadubara's son-in-law's father, who came over to take darshan of Lord Shiva the other day with his wife. And he was describing to me how in 1967, he's a Gujarati, grew up in an Indian village, was educated, became a doctor, moved to America in 1967, and was totally materialistic. He got into life in America. When he met devotees, they kept pushing him to come and associate with other devotees and things like that. He was a little hesitant and everything. But finally, his wife gave a donation, and the person who was visiting his home left The Science of Self-Realization. He said he read that book in 3 days, and it completely changed his life. That, you know, one of those. All of a sudden, it just changed everything, his whole mode. He started associating with devotees. That awakened it. It was like the match coming in contact with the dry wood. And so just a sharing.
Thank you. That's beautiful. And another point, just this experience happened in the 80s. Sometimes Swarga and I were out collecting for Gitanagari, so they sent us to sell paintings in different malls. But we were supposed to be undercover. You can't preach because, you know, if they find out we're devotees, they may kick us out of the mall, then we won't have the money to, you know, the whole nine yards. Anyway, so we would meet people. Swarga especially would talk to people in such a way they were attracted. They want to know, what is this? And we wanted to give them some prasadam. But, you know, we were on a full-time schedule, working 7 days a week, all the mall hours. So we asked the devotees at Gitanagari, please, please, please send us some cookies. They sent us a loaf of homemade bread. So what to do? We went and bought some candies, and we offered the candies. So like, we were giving them to different people, and maybe 6 months, sometime later, we came back to the same mall, and this one person came over and said, "That candy you gave me,
yeah,
I'd never tasted anything like it." I even went and bought the same brand of candy again, and it wasn't like the one you gave me. So I just wanted to share it. Yeah, it seemed
beautiful.
Appropriate.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.